You're listening to a stage talk titled Building Open Source Research into a Newsroom. To learn how you might embed open source practices into a traditional newsroom, we spoke with Mike Yambo from Kenya's Nation newspaper. Within the talk, he shared invaluable tips and tricks on getting started in OSINT and convincing your peers and employers of the value of the skill set. All of the links mentioned in the talk can be found in this episode's description. This talk was hosted by me, Charlotte Ma, on Thursday the 30th of January 2025 in the Bellingcat Discord server.
That was one hell of a task.
It's fine, we got there.
I hope you can hear me clearly.
We can hear you very
well. Oh yeah, I can see guys celebrating.
Caribou, welcome. We're all here for the Bellingcat Stage Talk series. This week, we're joined by Mike Yambo from the Nation newspaper in Kenya. Mike is their first and only, I think at this stage, open source investigator on the Nation team and is pioneering a new type of reporting there. I'll let him tell you how well it is going. Before working at the Nation, Mike also had some experience working on investigations with Africa Uncensored. Today, we're going to talk about how you might follow in Mike's footsteps, setting up open source research in a journalism/newsroom setting, and learn a little more about how Mike communicates his research to wider audiences. We're also going to run through some of Mike's recent investigations, looking at his methods and overall impact, one of which you can already find in our chat, which some of you had a nice read of while you were waiting. As we talk, please put your questions in the chat. And as I've just said, if you do not want me to read out your Discord username on the podcast recording, please make sure to note that in your question. And I'll make sure to ask those questions as we move into the Q&A section. Okay, Mike, we're ready. Please tell us more. I'm going to mute myself just while you talk a little bit about what you do.
All right. Thank you so much, Shelley. I'm truly, truly honored to be here. Thank you for this Bellingcat invite. It's a great honor, and I must say that I have been a long time for Bellingcat, just as everyone else. You guys do amazing stuff. My early inspiration for open source investigation was drawn by reading a lot of Bellingcat's works. And so my name is Mike Yambo. I'm an investigative journalist at Nation Media Group based in Nairobi. My work focuses on combining open source investigative techniques with traditional journalism. I'm here to share my experiences on not only pioneering open source investigations in our newsroom, but also share a journey of gradually building a new way of investigative storytelling at Nation. I also have a huge love for storytelling, which is why I'd like to share this personal experience through a story from how I entered the newsroom to working on actual open source investigations. Through this story, which I'll try to compress into the few minutes I've got, I believe you understand how we build an open source research based at Nation and why OSINT has become crucial to our investigative journalism. So when I was hired at Nation, an open source investigative, as an open source researcher, OSINT was a gray area in the newsroom. The traditional culture of reporting was dominant in our reports, and new techniques like fact-checking and using tools weren't very common. So I was hired as an investigative researcher who focused on infusing open source investigative techniques with traditional reporting. Our newsroom was at the time heavily shifting towards public interest stories, focused on investigative journalism, and open source journalism was a way of reinforcing our investigative storytelling. It was an immense challenge of not only debunking news and disinformation, but also facing now open source-led investigations. I think we all understand that OSINT is a relatively new concept in the newsrooms, especially the mainstream media, who are kind of now gradually trying to catch up. And this was also my fate. I also realized that most of our editors were struggling to understand this kind of storytelling. You know, only a few did. I remember my initial stories ended up re-edited to suit the traditional way of storytelling. Some ended up being published late, way beyond the headlines, while some ended up not seeing the light of the day. So when I say stories were really trying to fit the traditional way of storytelling, what this is what I simply mean. Some key components of authoring stories, like, you know, archiving links, hyperlinks, or even visualizations, ended up being removed. That was very frustrating, obviously, because that meant that I ended up with an incoherent piece of work. Something I found particularly hard was educating my seniors as to what Austin's pieces of work needed to look like. You can just imagine a newbie trying to educate an old journalist who has been in the TM for probably 20 plus years. In most cases, that would look like disrespect to them. And so I only explained my approaches to the ones who kind of bothered to ask me, and some editors who were particularly worried that it took too long to deliver a story. Remember, this is like a newsroom environment. Things are moving so fast, you know, and catching up with some of these things while using authoring methodologies might be particularly hard. But I think even as the editors worried about, you know, our turnaround times, I probably think they were right to a certain degree, because authoring stories are told from an evidence point of view. And fact-checking and verification is usually quite a lengthy process most of the time. So generally, it was a murky road in the beginning, to be honest. There was generally a slow culture to publish the fact checks I work on, with the speed at which other pieces got published. But I kind of had somehow braced myself for it, because I understood it would be hard based on the newsroom culture that existed way before my arrival. But interestingly, slowly by slowly, let me say, probably after a year, story after story, I began noticing a gradual shift. Some editors and colleagues started becoming curious to understand what OSINT was and what it took to produce such kind of reports. So instead of struggling with so many OSINT explanations, which is often boring, I believe, what I did was share my articles with the ones who were particularly interested. In that regard, I believe that it was easy to make them truly conceptualize the open source methodologies. To build an even more deeper sense of clarity on, you know, to make people truly understand and appreciate this kind of storytelling, what I did was simply collaborate on stories with other reporters, incorporating digital investigative elements into their stories. So from this proposition, we have produced major public interest journalism that are deploying open source techniques. We have debunked false claims from Kenya's Directorate of Criminal Investigations, that's Kenya's principal investigative agency under the National Police Service. And subsequently, our news reports resulted in a statement of public apology from the DPI, which is a very big win when it comes to public interest journalism. We have also used remote sensing tools to tell the story of how a religious cult that led to the deaths of hundreds of Kenyans secretly established itself inside a forest for 2 years. Most people did not really realize that this was going on. And this popularly became known as the Shakahola Massacre, where we used Sentinel Hub and we used Google Earth to kind of, you know, establish and determine when the cult start building their homes inside this forest in the name of prayers. And most of them ended up dying as a result of starvation. You know how cults can turn out to be. And we consistently also monitored protests, and in the process analyzed police brutality incidents using these open source techniques. We have also analyzed Twitter networks, particularly a Twitter network revealing how hashtags were deployed to spread memes and disinformation claims against Kenyan doctors who went for 90 days protest due to a poor working environment, and discovered that these were probably pro-government bloggers who are trying to drive a particular agenda to spread some sort of false claim against the doctors who are worried and very concerned about their working environment. We have also told stories about the current war raging in Sudan between the RSF and the Sudan Armed Forces. And this story, we largely pivoted our data from the Sudan Weakness Project under the Center for Information Resilience. Toward 2024, as last year, my amazing colleague, the researcher Jacqueline Macharia, did a brilliant work using open source information to track cases and establish a database on femicide statistics in Kenya. So on story after story, our newsroom, Nation, has produced investigations that have really relied on OSINT. I know that's quite a long story about how we began this and where we are so far. But before I conclude, I think I'd like to drop a piece of advice, like a general advice to someone or a newsroom that intends to venture into OSINT. One thing I've come to realize or kind of understand is that venturing into open source intelligence as an individual or newsroom requires some sort of elements like strategic planning, skill development, and even some ethical considerations before venturing into it. So the first step, I believe, of understanding OSINT is truly get to understand the statistics of OSINT if you want to do it for a large newsroom or even from an individual capacity. OSINT involves collecting, analyzing, and verifying publicly available information. And the best way to be good in OSINT, I believe, is to know how to find data, verify data, and how to analyze data. The second thing that I also kind of would like to pass to people who are interested in developing this kind of storytelling in their newsroom is to invest in training and skill development. Media houses can invest in training their journalists on the use of verification techniques in their reports. I have conducted trainings for journalists as well as attend many trainings myself as well. And as an individual journalist, identify an OSINT community or personality that does these kinds of works. On a personal note, I taught myself how to do this kind of journalism, to be honest. And I did this by cross-matching the YouTube tutorials of Benjamin Strip, who currently works for the Center for Information Resilience. He's been so very instrumental in my, you know, laying the foundations of my investigative open source journalism. And if you'd like to learn the fundamentals of OSINT reporting, I highly recommend you watch Ben's videos. They are very, very rich, and they kind of help you as a journalist nail the why, the where, and the when. He kind of uses tools to explain this, you know, basic concepts of a journalistic piece. I think I've also found Bellingcat's website having tons of free guides and resources, which can be very fundamental, especially if you need to develop your skills. Another website that offers free guides, particularly on video verification and AI, is witness.org. They have vast resources on how to, you know, navigate the AI space, which is now becoming a very elusive and a very big subject when it comes to the world of investigations. And also, generally, AI itself to kind of help you broaden your mental scope when you need to understand this kind of stuff around AI. Something else for a newsroom or an individual who intends to like put up an OSINT research desk is to learn the basic tools like, you know, Google Jotting. How do you refine your searches online? How do you go and find that particular piece of information that you're trying to find online? Google Jotting simply saves you time by being very particular on what you specifically want to find online. Another basic thing that one can probably invest in is knowing how to scan websites, knowing how to establish the validity of websites, for instance. And I know who is Lookup Tool is a very good tool. There are tools like Wayback Machine. There are basic things like, you know, performing reverse image searches. I believe these are very basic elements that one or a particular newsroom that intends to deploy this kind of tools or methodologies can easily invest on and produce story that can be, you know, the turnaround time is very fast. Something else, as you build your OSINT toolkit, is to learn the basic methods of social media analysis. There are tools out there. Most of them these days are paid, but some of them are free. That can help you analyze social media. For instance, I know X. You can use Meltwater Explorer to, you know, analyze the hashtags trends. You also analyze the sentiment analysis. I've used it before in my reports. The famous report around the storming of parliament, we began by, you know, analyzing the hashtags, seeing what people were saying online before transpiring their rage into the streets of Nairobi and other streets of Kenya. This also the most basic element of posting on Twitter. I believe most people should really, really invest in, because I think that is what kind of gave me the confidence around OSINT with the geolocation and satellite analysis. And one master tool to help you perform this is the Google Earth Pro, which has tons and tons of features that can help you to, you know, geolocate and also establish the locations of different things or situations that you're trying to find out. Sentinel Hub is also a very good one when it comes to establishing changes over time in a particular place. Geolocation and satellite analysis, I think, is one of the most common practices around OSINT right now. And it's one thing that can easily instill the confidence in you to be able to perform other aspects of OSINT. Something else is to develop a verification culture in your newsroom. This is something about encouraging a mindset of being skeptical about things that you see online. Just because something is online, it doesn't mean it's true. And so if you are able to like perform a Google reverse image search, for instance, and do a whole report about it, or just a very brief report about it, it can be very vital in establishing that foundational level of audience. In which most cases I like referring to as fact checking. OSINT is heavily reliant on fact checking, and so if you are able to perform small fact checks over time, then you'll be able to perform even complex fact checks and even perform complex OSINT investigations, the deep dive, over time. So you don't have to like start so big. You can start with a small fact check, and over time you truly understand and learn the basic and the different tenets that, you know, are tied to OSINT reporting. It's also very important to, even as you look forward to start out your OSINT research desk in your newsroom, or even intend to do this on a particular or like on an individual level, it's good to like ensure your digital security. And also look at the ethical considerations around this field of open source research. It's very vital to be aware of the legal risk. So just understand what the law points out concerning data in your own country and follow ethical guidelines to avoid or violation of privacy, which might end up in court cases, and you may probably end up with lawsuits or something which you do not want to enter into. The second last thing about integrating open source reporting into your reports or like into your newsroom is to apply OSINT techniques in your projects. I think I've mentioned it please a little bit. And it doesn't have to be mega reports at first, just simple fact checks as you slowly gain momentum over time. As a way to like integrate open source into your newsroom, probably also having a small dedicated team working around OSINT stuff, or even just hiring an OSINT specialist within the newsroom. And this will prove very significant. It can help in, I believe, two ways. It can save you time verifying information if your newsroom is so quick and fast. And also it will help you add the complementing elements of a story. For instance, visualizing data using data wrapper. So some of these tools and techniques can help you, you know, make your stories more rich and even more compelling to your audiences. And finally, leverage collaboration and open source communities. Some of the most successful OSINT investigations that I've seen, for instance, have one underlying factor in them, and that is collaboration. Collaborate with fact checkers and researchers to improve reporting accuracy. At Nation, for instance, we have active partnerships with other research organizations like Code for Africa. CFA basically has access to some awesome tools that we do not have at Nation. Therefore, we are able to, you know, have a sense of partnerships while doing some stories. I hope this was helpful when, you know, looking on how to set an awesome research desk into your newsroom. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll hand it over back to you, Charlie, for the Q&A session.
Mike Nakashikuru, thank you so much for that amazing brief. You went through so many tools just then that somebody in the chat said, this is like the most informative talk I've ever attended, has so much practical information for newcomers like me. So thank you so much for running through so many tips. And before I get to audience questions, I just wanted to ask you, what kind of sparked your passion in open source research? What was the moment where you decided to invest time into this skill set?
Interesting. So I just made completed campus. And at that point in time, the BBC had released something on Cameroon, a documentary called The Anatomy of a Killing, which I believe is very popular with open source researchers. And I thought, I was very curious about how this was done, you know, that level of masterpiece, and the fact that they were able to produce a very impactful piece of journalism. So I got really curious and I wanted to know how they did it. And over time, basically I'm a curious person. I tend to read a lot, especially when I discover new stuff. So just navigating the whole aspect of Google Maps, I came across Benjamin Street's YouTube channel, and he was there teaching so many things about Austin. But at that point in time, I didn't know that he was part of the team that was behind The Anatomy of a Killing. And so I found these tutorials very, very educative. And I think with the foundational level of fact checking that I got at Africa Uncensored, I got to build them over time by watching Ben's videos on YouTube. And Ben also cited Bellingcat in most of his examples. So it was some kind of ripple effect. And over time, I wanted to draw this methodology. So I ended up practicing. And slowly by slowly, that's how I got into OSINT. And coincidentally, I got a job a year later. Funny how I was learning all these things without being actively engaged in the journalism space. So when an interesting opportunity to be an investigative researcher at Nation came up, that power was able to, you know, get in and nail and execute some of these things that I had learned over time. So just to answer you precisely, that Anatomy of a Killing documentary sparked my enthusiasm for open source reporting.
Amazing. I've just shared the link to that in the chat. I believe some of our team helped on that, but I might be wrong. If anybody from the team back then can comment. I remember there's some relation to us, but anyway, it's amazing investigation if you haven't had a look at it. So please do check that out. And I also linked, while you were talking earlier, Bender Brown's YouTube channel as well. So please look at that. And Code for Africa as well while you're going through it. We have quite a few audience questions coming in. Following off your recent reporting on the storming of Parliament, someone's asked, how do you, when fact-checking government sources, how do you ensure the safety of your newsroom when you go up against the government, for example?
That's a particularly interesting question. So for the newsroom itself, you know, we have this set of ethical guidelines we have to operate around, especially, you know, now when it comes to storming of the parliament, for instance. Then there was a way we are supposed to handle the coverage, because it was a very hostile environment at that point in time, if you can remember. And I know I have some Kenyan audiences here. Boots on ground reporting became particularly hard for journalists themselves. So one of the things that we were taught to, you know, or kind of something that was kind of highlighted before we got up to the field at that point in time during the protests is to make sure that you try and provide the accurate information that is on the ground, for instance, because there was a lot of anger at that point in time and any misreporting or any misrepresentation on what was actually going on the grounds would have led to, you know, this public backlash or outrage. So we were very keen in terms of, you know, our reporting, trying to ensure the accuracy and also trying to not really miss out on some of the facts and the fundamental aspects of reporting. Just as a general, to keep, you know, the general media house image out there so well. We didn't really want to, you know, over-report or kind of, you know, over-analyze the situation, you know, being too sensational about our reports. That was one of the ways that we used, one of the approaches that we used while covering the protest, just being very factual and being very accurate. But something else that you can be, that you can look out for, especially when you are an authentic researcher, it's being able, you know, to prevent the doubts and to be able to prevent a lot of, you know, questioning around the works that you do is to be able to like show the methodology, the approach in which, you know, you do your reports. They need to be as transparent as possible, but also that's not enough because coming from a journalistic background and even at Nation, we try to blend this, you know, these methodologies to the actual stories, you know, or rather storytelling aspect. So kind of merging what our findings, the research findings, and also the quotes and also the reports and, you know, the things that the interviews that we carry out, marry them together and find a very accurate account for our reports. And that is what we also did during the protest. So it really helped us go a long way in terms of being accurate and, you know, being able to tell the truth out there to what was really happening, not only in Kenya, but also just clearly to the entire globe. It really got a lot of, you know, global attention at the point of time.
Absolutely. As we always say at Bellingcat, stick to the facts and always communicate that open source research can only get you so far as well, and that you're not coming with all of the answers, but with as much that open source can tell you. It's just a starting point for investigations, as we like to
get out. Yeah, right.
So we have a few more questions, and I want to make sure that we get to them before the end of the hour. So Sarah's asked, "Hi, Mike. I have to use Facebook a lot to dig into the social media of the community I'm curious about. And I wondered if you had any tips for researching on Facebook. I can't do something like create a list on Twitter, and it's extremely time consuming. Do you have any research tips for Facebook?"
Oof. Have I researched on Facebook recently? Not really. Yeah, but I mean, Facebook is a very interesting area, and you know, it's one of those you know, social media platforms that I haven't really ventured into. And then also considering that some of the tools were brought down, and also the most recent developments we are fact checking was discontinued. It's something that we are considering, that we are really, really upscaling as a newsroom, you know, how to tell more stories, especially regarding the digital threats around Facebook, because we have so much happening there in terms of scamming and also in terms of, you know, potential mis and disinformation. So it's an area that I've not really put on so much weight in terms of advising newsletter. It's something that, you know, and I'd really be interested in learning about also as well. Even as I continue doing further investigations, much of my investigations in recent times have heavily revolved around, you know, the dark social media sites like, you know, the Telegram, and I've also been heavily doing open source visual investigations. But Facebook is a very is a great area, and it's something that I think we'll work on so much moving forward. in our newsroom for sure.
Yeah, everybody in the chat was like, your sigh said it all. I think we're all feeling this kind of disappointment in what a lack of control we have over kind of Facebook research. You mentioned Telegram, so I've just popped into the chat.
Yeah,
one of Bellingcat's tools. Yeah, so we have a tool called the Telegram phone number checker. So I've just popped that into the chat for anybody who's regularly researching on Telegram. It's a really useful tool, so check that out on our GitHub. Thank you for going through all that, Mike, though. In terms of, you mentioned earlier that your newsroom was a little bit reluctant to take on open source at the beginning. What kind of changed your editors' minds? What kind of galvanized the change? Because you mentioned to me before the talk that your team was actually looking to grow. So what has kind of convinced your editors or your newsroom that open source is worth the investment?
Yeah, for sure. One thing is just producing stuff and, you know, getting your stuff out there. Because I remember at first it was so hard, you know, doing his reports and doing this fact check and see them, you know, turned into, you know, the traditional news articles. But it's very important now for my case. Then what I had at that point in time was producing so many reports and presenting to my editors and, you know, also being able to assess the value of whatever I was bringing in the newsroom at that point in time. Because we are trying to introduce a new thing altogether. Not so many people are familiar about it. And so you need to have a few reports to show some of the editors about the impact of your work. Also, just remember, it's easier to sell an idea when you have the actual work itself. And something else that's very important, especially to change the mindset and shift people's ideas and kind of how they view async, is to emphasize on the impact of async-driven investigations, such as exposing war crimes, for instance. In Africa, we have so much that is happening around Sudan and, you know, Congo right now. You can produce such kind of, you know, war crime stories. You truly make them understand the methodology, the process, and also probably the impact. Verifying this information or tracking illicit financial flows just demonstrates how async complements traditional reporting. This, you know, most editors, whenever, especially in the traditional newsroom setups, as long as you can save the resources, save the money, and somehow improve the your story's capabilities, then you see the interest, you know, gravitating towards your work. So basically, it's about having reports, impactful reports, that shows some of the editors the impact of your work, and also trying to emphasize the impact of async-driven investigations to the editor, so that they can see the real value and the real need to do this kind of journalism. In that sense, I believe it will be easier to, you know, sell the async idea to your newsroom bosses.
Thank you for that. We actually had a question earlier from Alicia, who was asking for some more information about how to find your Sudan work. So I've just linked in the chat one of your pieces called "Look, the Fire is Inside Your Houses, Where Are You? Sudan's War Within." But if there's any other particular links that you want to highlight, please pop them in the chat if you can, Mike, because I think there's quite a want to have a read of some of your Sudan coverage as well.
Oh yeah, sorry. So that Sudan investigation was kind of inspired by the need to, you know, report so proactively on Sudan, because so much of what was going on there. I also saw Bellingcat did something, NYT did something. But it was also kind of a way of adding up, you know, of getting the voices out there to the world to truly understand the situation in Sudan. It took us about 3 months to kind of nail it down. But I believe it's one of those pieces that had some sort of impact, especially and now that we are kind of highlighting the damage and the losses that Sudan underwent between 2023 and 2024. It was a very powerful awesome piece that it's one that I keep on responding to whenever probably I'm training or I'm giving out examples to some of my works. Yeah, there's so much in Africa. There's so much in Ethiopia currently. So, but I see the link to my Sudan works. It's a very classic example of how to do geolocations and chronolocations. Well, that's basically what you did over time.
Absolutely. And there's so many stories on the continent at the moment, unfortunately, to do with conflict as well. As you mentioned, we've been publishing on Burkina Faso as well. And we've just had a story come out yesterday by some of the members in the audience on the Democratic Republic of Congo as well. So thank you so much for sharing that in terms of your Sudan experience. In terms of your coverage, and you can see that from that article and also from your coverage of the storming of parliament, and you do a lot with visualizations. And something that I really connected with when I looked at your work was how well you communicate kind of the findings that you've come up with in your research. What are some of the factors that you consider when thinking about visualizations? What are the key factors you consider when thinking about how you're going to visually tell the story?
First of all, is to you know communicate the impact of that incident you're trying to find out out there. I believe through pictures and videos, it's very very easier to sell a story or like kind of communicate the impact of something that you're trying to communicate out there. But doing visual investigations and all that stuff around geolocations and chronolocation. You have to consider if that piece of media you're trying to analyze answers, because now I'm saying this from a journalistic point of view, if it answers the 4 W's on the H in a journalistic piece, but also the cases, you'll want to look into the who, the why, and the how. So if a particular piece of video, for instance, that is associated with the Kenyan protests, you want to understand, maybe you're trying to analyze a police brutality incident. You want to understand where that image was probably taken, when it was taken, and who was behind it. Those are some of the factors that I consider myself in my works, and I think probably other people do as well. And also on top of that, it will kind of help you to weave through your story and also add on top the element of telling aspect and the voice, the sources voices on top of it. So basically nailing and understanding the context and trying to answer those questions particularly well and having them come up so clearly will inform the decision to kind of have this piece of visual evidence as a journalistic piece of work. So basically it's analyzing the whole, the where, the how, and finally piecing it up together, adding on top the sources' voices to, kind of paint the context and the events very clearly. Because for us to tell stories from a journalism point of view, I think I've read much of Bellingcat's works. It's usually mostly based on research. But then now for us as a nation, we try to add the journalistic element on top of it to, kind of communicate, the wider problem. What is the human story in that data point or in that particular event that you're trying to answer with the 4 W's and H's? So that is our approach when it comes to visual storytelling.
And it's incredibly powerful. And I love how many different modes and mediums you use to tell those stories as well. Even referring back again to the Storming the Parliament piece, you have 3D models in there. I've seen cases where you've used peak visor to showcase the mountain ranges that you found. I think it's really amazing lots of different methods that you use in telling your stories.
Yeah. Basically, just to, add the juice to these kind of stories, make them even more relevant to people. Because I believe the whole essence of, doing journalism is to be able to communicate your story out there make people understand and truly engage them, because there's no whole point of showcasing all these brilliant skill sets without really, you know, addressing the real, real concern that needs to be addressed. So, you know, as much as, you know, I've borrowed all these Bellingcat styles of storytelling, in as much as we do heavy coding to our stories, we try to kind of help drive some sort of impact. So, and that's why we particularly add the human voices on top of our stories. I think that is a very powerful way to, you know, put your work out there as a journalist. Not only not focusing on the methods, you know, for instance, you mentioned the 3D models. They are very, you know, cool ways of telling a story, but we use them to make people even, make the people relate to that story even further.
Yeah, the innovation has to fuel understanding. We have one other question from the audience. Guilfoyle asks, and I think this is based on some of your comments earlier about ethically and doing investigations, particularly when you're starting out, and also thinking about how you stay secure as well. Guilfoyle said, how do you handle operational security among your whole team? I imagine you get several email phishing attempts given your line of work. Is that something that you have had to face, particularly since starting in open source research where you're kind of digging into large data sets? Have you had a lot of online threats or online attacks at all that you've had to deal with within your team?
Yeah, interesting. I mean, at the media house, you are attacked with a series of hashtags at some point last year as a result of our coverage, that we had all this forms of mis and disinformation spread against Nation Media Group. And it was politically driven, basically. But now, how can you, you know, stay safe while doing all this kind of stuff? Myself, I've not really gone so deep, especially to the aspects of, you know, maybe trying to, you know, track someone. But generally, I tend to think this whole concept of, you know, being secure online, probably like even having the virtual boxes, sometimes it tends to be really, really talking much about. But an essential thing generally as an authenticity, and this is something that I've picked up over time and I also read so much about it, it's really good to use secure communication channels as you try and, you know, probably reach your sources or try to contact people who maybe you believe are in some sort of danger. So, and there are tons of them out there, you know, secure communication channels. You have Session, we have Proton Mail, we have Saving. And I believe as open source researchers, I believe we have an idea of this. But if you don't, there are tons out there that, you know, maybe you can read and actually understand how to, you know, use them. Something else is just basically avoid logging into your personal accounts while maybe trying to track down an individual. In 2023, we did an investigation about, it was a PEP, a person of interest, like a politically exposed personality who was connected to the Al-Shabaab and terrorism in East Africa. And so as I was researching, and there was so much, tons and tons of information about this person on Facebook. At that point in time, what I did was establish another second account to help me kind of, you know, obscure myself. Because this guy basically would post stories on a daily basis. And if you probably do a mistake of, you know, going and filling the story using your real account, one that you used to connect to your loved one, or one that is so personal to you, they can be able to, you know, see your digital footprints or kind of see you as one of the viewers to that particular story. So having a second account or a banner account is very, very powerful. Also protecting yourself by knowing the legal risk associated with, you know, hosting, because some hosting techniques may violate data protection laws. VPNs are there. I know they've been talked so much about. I use it myself most of the time. As a company, we have a policy. Our emails are well protected in-house. We usually change our passwords after every 3 weeks or 1 month, I believe. So it kind of helps us, you know, secure our communication channels. So whenever you're trying to establish a connection with a source who probably maybe is a whistleblower, it kind of helps. It kind of limits, you know, the threats of hacking or phishing or all that stuff that involves security concerns. Yeah, so the changing of passwords, but that is done for us automatically in our media house. And also all those other things that are mentioned, they're very particularly important while, you know, doing this online repurchase. And it helps go a long way in terms of even keeping your own your loved ones secure, people who are so close to you.
Amazing. I know we started a little bit late, so I want to ask one last question, if that's okay, if you have time.
Yeah, absolutely. We can have all this time.
Amazing. The question I wanted to ask, and it's kind of a summary of what you've been speaking about, I wanted to understand from your perspective, what has been the best parts and the most difficult parts of working with open sources for breaking news stories, like fast-moving stories? What are the best and the most difficult aspects of working with open source in that context?
Oh, interesting question. Well, since I can't really compete with breaking news stories. Yeah, because breaking news stories basically are meant to, like, you know, move very quick. The story needs to be updated very quick and, you know, people move on after that. But the best thing, if you ask me, there's an investigation I did in 2023 around July. And my turnaround time was particularly faster. So we had this protest in Kenya. It was like an anti-government protest led by the opposition leaders. And we had a lot of police brutality meted out against opposition strongholds in Kenya. And there was this particular video that really went on viral online towards the end of those demonstrations on a particular evening. So there were a group of police, 16 police officers, met unleashing brutality towards a single person who was, you know, lying there helplessly. And so when this photo was shared to me by my editors, it was around 10 p.m., if my memory serves me right. And by midnight, I'd like kind of hacked a geolocation for that particular piece of video, and we were able to establish where it happened, the when, and all that, all those basic questions one asks themselves while maybe analyzing a piece of video. The following day, that particular geolocation was used by human rights organizations. I remember Amnesty International reaching out to me on my Twitter handle. They used that to, you know, go and provide help to the affected families. In the aftermath of those protests, because there was so much violence in the opposition strongholds. So I did, that was one of my successful stories, which, like, I turned, I had a quick turnaround, and it helped not only in my, in our newsroom, but it also helped, the public interest journalism that people are speaking about. Because you see human rights organizations, civil society organizations using a piece of work to, you know, help those families, that in itself is a very humbling moment for you and your career as a journalist. In terms of, you know, failures, we all have failures, especially when, you know, probably we're doing open source research or maybe when we are getting started. Keeping up with the news cycle can be so hard. One thing that we've not really, really on a personal level, I've not really nailed so well, is, you know, applying all those tools. We have so many tools, and which are quite expensive to, you know, have access to. And so some of the stories that potential stories that I identify online, like coordinated inauthentic behaviors online, or particularly on X, I tend to miss out on some of those stories. On the day they happen. But then through collaborations, I mentioned we collaborate with Code for Africa. we're usually able to reach out later to them and they provide us with the necessary data that can help us tell that story after a day or two or even a week. So we do not really have access to all the tools. You know, some of them are very expensive, but we have access to majority of the tools, basically. So that usually makes me feel somehow bad about, you know, missing out and, you know, missing out on reporting some of these aspects. But we usually make up for that reporting on that incident way later, like the day to reporting aspects to it. So we don't do it as a breaking news story or a regular news story. We do it as a day to study a piece of story. Yeah, and that's how I've been able to navigate my success and failure around, and it's been impactful generally.
Such good advice, because I know that's something that a lot of people struggle with, is kind of the fast-moving nature of news and how to cover it with open source as quickly as possible. I mean, at Bellingcat, we still struggle with that sometimes in terms of mobilization, particularly when there's multiple news stories a day. So thank you so much for that advice, Mike. As on to Sana, it's been amazing to have you. In the beginning, you said that you were a fan of Bellingcat. I think you've created a fan of Mike's, to be honest, in the audience, myself included. Thank you so much for this talk. It's been amazing. And some of our mods have put in the chat, please hang
on. Thank you so much, Ali and Bellingcat, for having me.
Some of our mods have put in the chat, please hang around the Discord server, because there's quite a lot of people who want to ask you questions in the server. So please do hang around afterwards as well, and just have a little browse. Thank you so much for this talk. And thank you to everybody who's joined in the audience as well today.
Thank you for listening to the Stage Talk. If you'd like to catch a Stage Talk live, where you can ask the guest questions, join the Bellingcat Discord server by visiting www.discord.gg/Bellingcat. The music you've heard is titled Dawn by Newer Self and is courtesy of Artlist.